again, and welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast with Deborah Prinzing, episode 178. This is the podcast about American flowers and the people who grow and design with them. It's all about making a conscious choice, and I invite you to join the conversation and the creative community. This podcast is brought to you by slowflowers.com, the free nationwide online directory to florists, shops, and studios who design with American-grown flowers, and to the farms that grow those blooms. It's the conscious choice for buying and sending flowers. And a special thanks to our lead sponsor for 2015, the California Cut Flower Commission, committed to making a difference as an advocate for American-grown flowers. Learn more at ccfc.org. This past week brought Slow Flowers to Southern California, where I combined business, pleasure, flowers, and friends in a whirlwind 5 days. I successfully cornered Mud Baron, one who rarely slows down himself, to record today's interview. I've wanted to have Mud on the podcast for more than a year, ever since I visited Muir Ranch, the school garden he manages at John Muir High School in Pasadena. You may not know him as Mud Baron. Yes, his nickname is Mud. But if you're a follower of beautiful flower images on Instagram, you may know him by Coco Zochi or at COCOXOCHITL, his alias there, with 4,500 followers and thousands of posts. And many contain the hashtag Flowers on Your Head, one of Mud's gleefully subversive campaigns to place flowers on people's heads and snap a photograph, Frida Kahlo-like, for Instagram and other places. As we discuss in the interview, I have succumbed to Mud's Flowers on Your Head shenanigans and also witnessed him at work, getting complete strangers to comply with his outrageous and quite poignant requests. Visit DeborahPrinzing.com, where I've posted some of those photos in my show notes, including the portrait I took of today's guest with flowers on his head, shot when he was on a trip to Seattle last spring. Here's a bit of what I wrote in August of 2013 after a visit to Muir Ranch. I hope it rounds out this introduction of Mud. In 2011, a dedicated team of volunteer teachers and students began converting 1.5 acres of John Muir High School's campus into a school-based farm. Today, Muir Ranch grows a variety of flowers, vegetables, and fruits that are included in weekly CSA boxes, as well as school cafeteria lunches. Students can complete community service or internship graduation requirements by enrolling in classes at the ranch. Muir Ranch also provides paid internships to students, which are funded by private donations, special events, farmers market sales, and subscriptions to the CSA program. Every week, Muir Ranch CSA subscribers receive a box or bag of about 7 to 10 different types of fruits and vegetables grown without the use of pesticides or chemical fertilizers. Customers pick up their shares at central distribution sites throughout Pasadena. Muir Ranch CSA also partners with local farms for seasonal fruit and vegetables that supplement what they can produce themselves, providing tax-deductible weekly boxes to over 100 subscribers. It is the CSA program that generates much of the income that keeps this place operating. Mud Baron, a passionate school garden advocate, serves as the executive director of Muir Ranch. He's one of the people at the hub of this endeavor. That sounds like a highfalutin title, but in all reality, he is true to his nickname. Mud gets down and dirty and real with his students. These kids are teenagers whose horizons are much brighter after they've learned how to grow and sell food and flowers to local customers. So how did this former design-build contractor end up teaching gardening and farming skills to urban youth? I'm still trying to figure out the exact path of Mud's career, but suffice it to say he's in his element growing food and flowers. Many programs beside the CSA are supported under the umbrella of Muir Ranch, such as partnership CSAs run with other local schools and learning gardens. Muir Ranch hosts monthly plug mobs, P-L-U-G mobs, which is kind of a fun name, to help other groups in the community plant their own gardens. In Mud's mind, no Southern California-based teacher should go wanting for school garden supplies. The plug mob program means that finding seeds and plants is no longer a factor for 2,000 schools in our region, he says. Muir Ranch operates like a plant nursery, helping source and distribute seeds, bulbs, and flats of plant starts. Like a modern-day Johnny Appleseed, Mudd and his supporters share what they have and spread around the love. As more young people connect the dots, they become involved in how food is grown, distributed, and finally cooked into healthy meals. Besides being a center for education, Muir Ranch hosts a variety of ongoing programs and special events. The program is known for its floral arrangements, and I love that Mudd has taught his interns and student workers how to harvest and assemble bouquets. Word is getting out about Muir Ranch's flowers. One of Mudd's interns just earned several hundred dollars selling wedding flowers to a market customer. According to Mudd, that experience opened her eyes to possibilities for a bright future as a floral designer. Things are ever-changing at this school garden, with new crops of kids getting involved and older ones graduating and enrolling in college. And Mudd continues his radical outreach on behalf of school gardening, food justice, and the importance of flowers in our lives. Please enjoy our conversation. I promise you, it's going to be all over the place, bouncing between sentimental and serious to hilariously irreverent, a lot like Mudd himself. Welcome back to the Slow Flowers Podcast. This is a special edition from Pasadena, California. I'm sitting here on a beautiful January day with Mudd Barron. Hello, Mudd.
Hey, Deborah.
How are you?
I'm slow. I'm ready for you.
Good. Well, the last time I saw you, you put an enormous bouquet of flowers on my head and took photos, and that was in Seattle in March of 2014. Remember that?
I do, and it would have been a shame to waste those flowers that I stole from the Seattle wholesale flowers market by
That's
not
right.
putting them on your head.
Well, I also remember that we were walking around Pioneer Square with flowers, and it was a big soccer game day
right
for the Sounders, and we were
what team again? I think they lost to the Galaxy.
I don't think so. Hey, you're talking to a Seahawks fan.
Yeah, good luck with that. Here, no more sun for you.
Oh well. But it was pretty funny to watch you go up to a lot of rabid local soccer fans and mm-hmm. guys
right
and make them pose with flowers
right.
on their head. And
yeah,
why do you
even straight dudes even?
Oh totally. Yeah,
I am one, but whatever.
But the novelty of that blew their minds.
Well, did it?
Well, it was fun to watch.
Yeah, well, flowers are pretty amazing, right?
So yes.
It's just a question of how do you engage with them? And you give people the challenge sometimes, the rise to the occasion, even if they are Seattle fans.
Okay, so we met because you've been active for years in school gardening projects in L.A. and Pasadena and yep. many various locations and iterations.
I'm a bit masochist on that level, yeah.
Yeah. I was enthralled. I have been enthralled with the fact that most people who are involved in school gardening, it's all about the food. And it's mm-hmm. and food is, of course, essential. But you have this artistic side. You have this, you're drawn to blooms. And somehow you've always integrated flower farming into food farming. And why is that?
Well, here's the premise that flowers aren't food, right? So not that you're an anthropocentric, horrible human, even if you are. And I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. Flowers are food. But they're just not food for humans.
Right.
So who are we talking about, right? Who's the center of the universe there?
I love it.
So, yeah, flowers are food. Everything that blooms, everything that has pollen, there's some bee that's going to find it. Or we just did a big event with one of our great sponsors, Miracle-Gro, oddly. Biggest organic compost and company in the garden industry. And we planted, I don't know, 1,000 pollinator plants. Hey, you know,
yeah.
that's a great thing. The butterflies won, the bees won, and it's a big company that's moving in a better direction. And they fund my actual students who are interns in their attempt to make better food for people and pollinators happen.
Mm-hmm. When you were talking about flowers being food, I thought you were going to go in a completely different direction about
yeah,
food
yeah.
for the Hold soul
on there.
And
on
food
there.
For your spirit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hold visually on there, beautiful.
Bacon. Too odd of a reference anyway. Yeah, stop with the 19th century romanticism.
Okay, so what
of course they're that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, literally they are food for,
right.
for bees.
Well, I do like to say that to people. Like, you know, you would not have a bountiful food garden if you didn't have nectar sources or pollen sources in your garden, which is one reason.
Yeah.
If it's a completely pragmatic reason to grow right. zinnias or whatever.
Right. Well, I mean, the whole reason why I got into school gardens is my hobby is giving flowers away.
Yes, it is.
Very specific. flowers given away and to anybody. So I started off doing school gardens because there was this 7-acre tract in North Hollywood where I lived at the time that was pretty much fallow, except for a teacher that was a little overwhelmed and some space in Southern California. I'm a Unitarian, but I can say this pretty strongly. You know, SoCal, we're God's gift to horticulture in terms of climate. It wasn't just Mr. Chaplin that thought it was good for filming. I mean, what is it, 72 degrees right now?
It's
middle
perfect.
Of January.
Yeah, yeah.
It's why the Galaxy's so good when they trounce Seattle in all
Stop
those championships.
Stop it. I don't even care about soccer.
I know you don't, but it's kind of fun.
So,
but no,
yeah.
That climate, I mean,
yeah,
you know,
it's perfect.
You don't have to be a Huell Hauser nut, but if you were, you could see that episode where he goes to the Eckes Ranch, because the poinsettias used to be grown on Sunset, right?
Right.
About 3 miles, 4 miles from where we're sitting right now, there's Dahlia Heights Elementary. What? Dahlia Heights in Northeast LA? Yeah, well, it was a Dahlia farm.
Wow.
And we're about a mile north of the Rose Bowl right here.
Right.
Emphasis the word rose.
Right.
And,
the bountiful land of plenty.
Whoa, yeah. I mean, of course, the real estate value is a little bit higher than your average farm field. But, you know, where I am now, your ranch, we've got 3 acres at a campus with 50. And, you know, the kids get to engage firsthand in a conversation with David Austin roses, butterflies, and the occasional kale plant that sneaks its way in.
Mm-hmm. The giving away of flowers has made its way onto Twitter and Instagram, and I think you and I met at a garden writers conference in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it was great. You bought me a drink. That was a good way to start.
And then I think the following summer I was in Alaska, and I got a phone call from you on my cell phone saying, "Hi, it's Mud Baron. I'm in the Pike Place Market. I'm in Seattle. You want to get together?" And I was like, wow, he had my phone number. but I couldn't see you because I was touring peony fields up in Homer, Alaska.
Of course you were.
Yeah, in
that's
2012.
What you do. You're so glamorous.
I was determined to get up there, and that's how you are. You're determined to do things, but you follow the flowers, and it seems to me that this, what I was bringing up Twitter and Instagram, is that you were giving away flowers visually very early on by just posting beautiful photos of what you picked that day.
Right.
When no one else in the country could because it was, you know, January. You're growing David Austin's, which is your secret flower crush, is David
Nothing
Austin,
secret
right?
about that. I'm out. I'm out of that closet. I'm right there, man. I got a David.
Your man crush.
I have a David tattoo on my right butt cheek next to Martha and Cornel West. It's a trio.
I don't believe you, but I can picture it.
Look, I'm taking my pants down right now. See that?
Gorgeous.
There we go.
But you were
posting.
See
how they got the gap in Cornell's teeth? It's really very,
it's perfect.
Yeah, okay.
Love the pink ink too.
Yeah.
So you're giving away visual flowers to people, and can you say the name of your address on Twitter, because I can never pronounce it?
Yeah, it means the Aztec word for Dahlia.
Okay.
And you don't have to be able to spell in the world of social media; just cut and paste. So it's pronounced Cocozochi.
Okay.
Right? And
I always call it, in my mind, as Cocotillo. I don't know why, but
yeah,
Cocozochi. Okay.
That was too many margaritas ago for you. So the Dahlia is the national flower in Mexico. Predominant majority of my students over the years have been Latino, specifically Mexican-American, or even Mexican. And Cocozochi. Cocoxochitl.
Okay.
You know, because Dahl was some Swedish Eurotrash kid, you know, back in Spain, and he was a friend of that Linnaeus dude. But, you know, when stuff came off the ships from the New World, whether it was a potato, tomato, or all the other stuff, what didn't exactly come with a label, you
right.
know, Euro-American wasn't sending anyone, you know, those fancy Proven Winners labels. So
basically, this
Danish, Swedish kid, Anders Dahl, figured it out, and now we know them as Dahlias. But that's my favorite flower.
But you like to honor the origins, which is that they're Mexican flowers, and that's what they're called in Mexico.
Which is also a name for Southern California. So it's all relative.
Wow. Okay,
because I like to poke at those California native folks who have this, as my buddy Larry Santoyo puts it, have this pristine idea of what a California native is, was a plant growing where it was when some white dude in a wagon showed up.
Mm-hmm.
Come on now.
I have to say that I had an editor recently ask me to write about native California flowers for Valentine's Day gift giving, and I'm like, there are no
AKA weeds.
There's nothing that you can cultivate.
Wait, you are absolutely wrong.
Okay, what would you do?
If you don't love someone very much or at all, you can give them some, I don't know, some Cleveland sage that looks like it got thrown in a microwave for three minutes.
I would put Cleveland sage in a bouquet, but
not that time of year.
Right, it's the wrong time of year.
It's not woken up, it's tired.
Winter is not ideal. And Valentine's Day happens in May, maybe we'd be talking a different story.
You know, there's some irises that are really great, but
that's true, Pacific Coast irises.
They're water pigs.
Yeah.
They are. They just happen to be in a wet spot in California. I love, since we're talking, I mean, what you should have redirected your editor towards, bad writer.
No, I'm in play on this. I'm picking your brain.
Yeah, no, it's California friendly. And that's our mutual friend, you know, Resendez Brothers, who are like getting into the peak of their season. And when we say Resendez Brothers, what do we mean?
We mean everything Protea.
Everything Protea, which is like, oh,
and pincushions.
My gosh.
And,
yeah, the Grevilleas, the Banksias, Leucodendrons, the wax. All such good stuff. Just stunning.
I like that. California friendly.
California friendly.
Yeah. Because that means it's not going to use our natural resources in a non-sustainable way.
Yeah.
But they're Mediterranean plants that are adapted to this climate.
Right. California friendly plants are a lot like, a girlfriend in college. You just, you know, ignore them, don't really are nice to them, and they're just there, beautiful.
Okay, next. I want to go back to your so you have
I give flowers away, dahlias, there's
okay,
David Austin.
Remind me about that, yeah. So you have this profile on social, and that's really fun. You're doing all this stuff just off your little phone in your back pocket, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you started posting photos of people with flowers on their head.
Sure.
So back to my reference to the last time we saw each other and you did this. What possessed you? You just, you're a crazy man.
Yeah,
but people
good.
Have responded so positively to this.
Thank you. And the hashtag is flowers on your head, right? All one.
I want to know this.
Stuck together. Flowers on your head.
We'll put that on my show notes.
So how I discovered it is I was in City Hall. I was asked by a nonprofit, Root Down LA, to go find space to build a farm in South LA. And I'm a former deputy for an elected official,
okay.
So it's not...
You're not afraid of going
I kind of know that world. And our current mayor in Los Angeles, I'm in Pasadena now, but in Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, his favorites are gladiolas. So you show up to City Hall with carts and carts of flowers, and suddenly you have friends. So I called one of my friends in the city council office and said, hey, I'm coming. I'm going to give flowers away. Can I get parking? And they're like, yes. And so I start pushing the cart around and had
like
a great day.
Like, you mean
day.
Up and down the halls?
Oh, yeah,
City Hall.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, but your agenda was to get some land for a nonprofit garden.
Yeah, of course. But
indirectly.
Here's the thing. If you want someone to do something, you should, you know, they should like you. And flowers are a good way to achieve that. And also, you know, the Machiavellian intent that's in that statement. Well, you know, I'm giving flowers away to electeds and their staff mostly. But, you know, you can also say, hey, if the flowers are good enough for you, Mr. Fancy Pants, what do the kids deserve?
Yeah.
And that's really it. I mean, I wish people would do things for the real rational reasons. But, you know, we live in an irrational world with irrational people. So I had all these leftover flowers after my day at City Hall. And I made some progress getting the space for the farm in South L.A. But I had leftovers. And I had to go teach a class at the exotic intersection of 60th and Figueroa in South L.A. They've rebranded it. It's not South Central anymore. It's now South L.A. So I go, and I'm unloading the truck of what leftovers there were, which were probably two or three buckets, and the flowers are somewhat beat up. And one of the kids came over, Caitlin, who's about 8 or 9, African-American, and she was the first one there. I was really surprised that I didn't get, like, swamped and everything grabbed. But there she is, and I said, well, here, you hold these. And she holds one bouquet. And then she holds another one, and all of a sudden she's got three, and it looked like...
She was surrounded by blooms.
Like, oh my God, that's it.
It was so beautiful.
It was that little epiphany moment, like, wow, okay, we've got something there.
And you said, honey, stand still, I'm going to take your picture.
And of course, I always say, stand still, I'm going to take your picture. one of the things I learned from Jamie Oliver, if it didn't happen on camera, it never happened. So, yeah.
That's another story.
It's, this is not new. This is Frida Kahlo. I get a lot of Carmen Miranda references. I'm waiting to do this to Billy Goodnick because his Carmen Miranda is not so inner. It's very much already out.
Right. He's going to have to take off that pork pie hat, though.
You got right to what I was going at, right?
Wait a minute, do I take away your punchline?
Oh, no. No, Billy is a punchline. What are you talking about? So, and then you've got Caravaggio with Bacchus. So, you know, it's
so
and then
true.
If
it's
you just,
brilliant.
You know, in Africa, some of the tribal stuff that's done, You know, you're not. I'm not discovering anything new.
Right.
I'm just. I'm letting people discover stuff about themselves they didn't know, because I'd like to think, you know, especially if you look at the eyes in my photos, is that eye kind of fades away, and it's the plant, it's the flowers, it's the human, and it's them.
It is. They're so provocative, but in the way that you want to know that person's story, their personal story, because it's somehow you take off the mask. And it's uninhibited. Mm. They're uninhibited when they allow flowers to be perched on their head.
It pulls them out of their routine, definitely, because they didn't have flowers on their head before I showed up.
Well, and let's back up for a second. I track a lot of, I hate to use the word trend, a lot of cultural shifts in floral. Okay. And the head wreath, yeah. And the flower, you know.
The dreaded Coachella effect.
Well, yeah, the floral crown, right. You know, all of that. The kind of boho chic look.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really hot right now. And
sure.
When I saw you were doing flowers on your head, I automatically realized you're not taking a wire and gently, you know, attaching the stems to this perfect, like, arc or ring. It's not a wearable, permanent piece of jewelry. It's an of-the-moment. You just balance them on people's heads.
Gravity,
right?
Does half the work.
Because I couldn't believe it when you did it with me. I was like, okay, I have that excellent posture here.
Right.
And you sit up and you look at the camera.
Again, it's about taking that line away from you and the plant. So you got to kind of be one with them for they're going to be on
true.
The ground.
So how many people do you think you have documented wearing or having flowers on your head? You should go back
thousands.
And count.
It's thousands
it
at this
is.
Point. Because we did an event at City Hall with Mayor Garcetti's office, as a matter of fact, for Food Day. And I do this other thing called plug mobs, right, which I give plugs and seedlings away because the garden industry has stepped up quite a bit with their extras.
Yeah.
And so we did that, but since I already had the relationship with the mayor's office, I said, hey, will you sponsor my flowers on your head photo shoot? They're like, yeah.
What was
like,
that?
That was just a few months ago. And God, it was like an assembly line. We must have shot 50 people in that afternoon. And it was like the most fun part of it.
When was that?
And there was some kale in there, too.
Oh, so of course.
So I know. I slum
edible
it. I slum
flowers.
It. I slum it every now and then with vegetables.
No, people like kale in floral
of
arrangements.
They
just
do.
Ask Christina Stemble.
I do.
It's the
I
basis
do.
Of Farm Girl's designs.
Right. It gets stinky after a few days, but I only need you for 10 minutes.
No, it's cool.
Yeah. So,
when
know,
was that? That you did that.
And we're doing an event, and I'm going to need your help.
Okay.
It's for International Happiness Day. It's coming up in about 2 months, and we're doing it in downtown and Chinatown in the Arts District, and we're putting flowers on people's heads. Hopefully the California Flower Commission will slide some flowers our way.
Oh.
We'll be able to shoot a couple hundred people.
I think that's awesome.
Because that's what they gave me a goal. Like, can you shoot 200 people? I go, well, if I've got some more people shooting, and I've got some more florists. Because I'm happy to see other people grab it and go with it, because it's pretty awesome.
That's interesting. I think that's it. It's not like you're running around trying to trademark this. You're just trying to get a movement going that will inspire other people to see flowers the way you do.
Not just flowers, but, you know, I mean, it's Los Angeles. So when I first moved here 20-something years ago and I worked for an environmental group, Earth Island, everyone says, oh, you're moving to Southern California. Well, there's strip malls,
yeah,
and there's
concrete.
Parking lots and all the traffic. And they're absolutely right. Those things exist. But it's also, you know, it has this, used to be the largest agricultural county in the country, and I'm a farm kid. So I see, like, I look at a lemon tree, and I'm still kind of, I fall in love every time I look at my lemon tree in
right.
my backyard.
Right.
Like, damn, look at that.
Citrus.
That's a lemon tree out there.
I couldn't grow citrus growing up. Right.
And a third generation Japanese-American farm family I know, and third generation with a little bit of abbreviation for the internment camp.
Yeah.
But mom, who was in one of the camps, she told me, she's like, yeah. Pretty much, non-Californians make the best California growers.
Mm.
So, you know, this could be
so this melting
place could
pot.
Be such a better, bigger expression of what humanity is. And part of that is the living world, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a cheerleader for that.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
We talked about the plug mobs, and I want to just have you share a little bit about that. I think it will inspire people who are growers that there is always a demand for your extras, and you just have to be and I know there are some wonderful programs around the country with florists who are you know, intentionally donating flowers after a wedding or an event to a charity or
sure.
to a hospital. So there are other ways that people can do this, but you're trying to take a plug is basically a start, a plant start, yeah. Right?
Comes out of a plug tray, and it's a cookie sheet size commercial grower piece of equipment there.
Yeah.
Not too complicated, but
you know, these are like, we're talking like inches.
A 512 tray is 512, you know, green zebra tomatoes on a
okay.
cookie sheet.
Okay.
It's a lot. Or it's a 102, which is almost a six pack size. So my background is I used to be a cabinet maker.
Okay.
Right, that's what I did before I did this strange thing, which was, you know, international cheerleader for all things school garden. Yeah. And one of the things I learned about being a cabinet maker, and when I would have a job and I specialized in like 1920s reproduction work and those glass knobs, right?
Love.
So those beautiful
deco
steel
stuff.
More poverty bungalow,
okay.
Like 1920s, not green, but your standard 1920s, you know, either Spanish revival or craftsmanish
mm-hmm.
house, just straightforward, the same kind of things the Italian carpenters made 100 years ago.
Right.
But, yeah. So anyway, restoration hardware type stuff. And I discovered that stuff's available by the container load. And every industry, you know, you're a writer, so you have extra pieces laying around.
Right.
Realtors have extra land laying around. Cabinet makers have extra boxes laying around. So when I fell in love with school gardens and I thought everyone should be able to do this, I said there has to be a smarter way to get plants. Going to Home Depot on a Saturday when a teacher could and begging the garden manager, whose job is just to sell stuff, not take care of you other
right.
than as a customer.
Right.
But, you know, that
ask
average
him for a little discount or something.
Yeah, that would be like, that's just a horrible way to do it. And honestly, they don't make the plants. Someone makes these plants. So I spent a little bit of time and I found a company in San Diego who grows plugs for the people that grow the six packs, who grow for Home Depot.
Right.
And they grow 300 million to sell, right? And when you sell 300 million plants, you might grow 330 million. So what do you do with that extra 30 million not so ready
right.
for prime time, not so pretty stuff? So there we go.
You asked them if they would be willing to donate.
I was a customer at first.
Okay.
And I said, hey, you got any extras? And lordy, did they have extras. But it turns out, you know, the owner of the company, Tim Wada, who's a sweetheart, he was in a garden class at Carson High School. So he understood where we were, what it was. And there's two ways to look at it. There's one, they have extra plants. Sure, they've got to do something with them. They can throw them away or sell them at a discount. Or, you know what? Maybe they're helping me corrupt a whole generation of children and turning them into gardeners. Because if you get the bug when you're 10, 5, 15, you know, yeah,
it's a lifelong skill.
You might be buying one of those magazines where your fancy articles are in when you're 30 and you have your own kids and you're debating whether you go to the Unitarian Church, the Jewish Temple, or the Catholic Mass.
So you have these events how often?
So I have these events monthly. We just had one that was gangbusters. We had over 200 schools attend. We didn't make people do a sign-in. I was just a rebel.
So you basically invite anyone who's involved in a school garden project in the
or
LA
gardens
County.
With kids.
Okay.
Not a lot of the garden projects don't always happen in schools, but
okay.
people that do good work.
Community gardens.
Community gardens, school gardens,
youth gardens.
Temple gardens, service projects, all sorts of things.
Nonprofits.
Horrible people, all of them.
Their hearts are in the right place.
Pretty much.
So you say to them,
if their trowels aren't, they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah,
but you know,
say we've got this event.
Right.
Do you sell the plugs?
No, we give them away.
Wow.
It's like a buffet, and you know, a plug tray again. It's 300 kale plants. There's never enough kale. Seed the Change has been a really great sponsor for 5 years now. So we have seeds from them. We had 1,000 packets.
Wow.
That's
so powerful, Mud.
Well, it's also, you know,
you just convene this event that makes sense to you, and
right.
look at how many thousands of people. You don't even know how many people this is touching.
I don't know how many people this is touching. I'm dealing with the people that are the garden teachers.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, your garden program, it's not sustainable. I'm like, well, you know what? If you didn't fund a math program, probably that wouldn't be sustainable either. So by giving plants and seeds, which are something, you know, unlike any other nonprofit sector, you know, as my grandma would say, farmers grow shit. So we actually create value over time. You know, what's the value of one tomato seed? Right.
You
know, it might be $100 worth of tomatoes by the
down
end of
the road.
Season.
Right.
So you just lower the threshold to make success happen for the folks that are showing kids how to garden. And they have common needs. It's not mysterious. Plants, seeds, that's one thing. Compost, literally shit is another. I love to give people shit.
Do you get a donation of compost?
We've got some stuff from Miracle-Gro this year, which is great. We've had donors over the years. I mean, it's heavy, it's bulky.
Yeah.
Nothing's free. Yeah. So, you know, even if it's a 20-yard pile, Athens Services has given us compost over the years. They recycle green waste and restaurant waste, right? And they turn it into really great, high-grade compost. It costs money to get that truck from here to there.
Sure.
But the one thing, you know, you can count on, and the weather you can't, is that, you know, this time of year, people are going to want kale seedlings. And in 2 months, we're in SoCal, remember, they're going to want tomato plants.
Wow. Yeah. And the Plug Mob program, is it only food, or do you sometimes tuck a little flowers?
Well, that's kind of the awesome thing about it, right? So this is the conceit. I'll tell you my secret. So giving away kale, no problem for me.
Right.
I'm the perfect person to do this because I'm not gonna Bogart at all. The whole rest of the world. And I think kale's better planted from seeds, and I order that for $10 to $20 a pound from Urban Farmer Seeds and
for your
Indianapolis.
Your school
projects. We seed things. I mean, it's just ever so much faster than putting, you know,
a little plug in a
1,500 kale plant seedlings in the ground. Come on now,
that's
we're
manual
farmers.
Labor.
We're farmers. Yeah. Well, I employ the kids, but we got to be smart. So. Yeah, we give away the kale plants, but I also got the last pickup because I have to go down to San Diego, which is not punishment by any stretch of the means. I found some Centranthus rubra.
Oh, wow.
Right. Yeah, rosy pink, I believe.
Wow.
So I got that tray, and I'm like, I'm not giving that away.
No.
So
can
that
I
was
tell
my
you
bonus.
Something? That's like a weed on the freeways in Washington State.
Of course it is.
But down here, it's special.
Well, it's also a great pollinator. It's
yeah,
great in cut flower arrangements.
It is.
The stems are semi-succulent.
It is.
Which is why it's like a weed. It really doesn't, again, it's like that college girlfriend. Doesn't really require a lot of care and attention.
Low maintenance.
And there's always another one.
Oh, my gosh. How are we going to get out of this interview now?
Well, let's talk about flowers under your head. Why does that matter?
I think it does matter. And I'm enchanted with the idea. I think it's going to go, you know.
It's almost like I should have a book or something.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's viral in that every time you post, people repost, people comment, people want to be photographed by you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're starting this kind of.
It makes it easier to get folks when you're. To shoot when you're being stalked. It's
right,
so easy.
Right. So you just do that just randomly and then by invitation. You're like a stand-up comic who will show up at an event and do flowers on your head, or do you prefer to be like stealth about it?
It all depends. I mean, there's some people that just won't do it, and I'm like, you know, for example, I'll just throw him under the bus since it's a biodiesel bus. You know, my buddy Ron Finley, he would not do it. We're at the LA Art Show, and I've got the editor of the LA Weekly Arts section. I've got one of the leading curators in Los Angeles. They did it. The founder of Juxtapose Magazine, which is one of my favorites. He's got flowers.
They're game.
And Ron's like, no. Nah.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So everyone, I think, is a little bit amazing. And there's this quote, you know, that most people know from Andy Warhol. They know the more popular one, and I'm not going to say it. But the one I like a lot is land is really the best form of art. And so with flowers on your head, what I can achieve is, you know, putting someone in the landscape.
Right.
They're the landscape.
Yeah.
The flowers are the person. I don't know. It
I
goes
love
back
that.
And forth.
And you grow the flowers. So then there's
a lot
another
of them.
Piece.
I got some great flowers. For that event, I got some great ones from Resendez Brothers.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You either grow them or you know who grew them. And
I know
so you've
who
got
grows
a story.
Them. Yeah. We grow a lot of artichokes and cardoons.
Yeah,
crazy.
Their foliage is insane.
Right. That's one of the things that we can count on. Up until just a few weeks ago, I thought my amaranth was immune from freezing. Oh no.
Aww.
It got crispy. We can have a frost. We're up against the San Gabriels, as your radio listeners can see. That cold air comes down. Up until about March 1st, we could get a freeze.
Yeah.
Not a hard one.
But enough to zap those amaranth.
Just the amaranth.
And the annuals.
I've never seen it freeze before. And it was right there, and plants 20 feet away didn't. So, but the flowers that go on your head and go on people's heads, yeah, I know where most of them come from.
That's cool. Well, this has been really fun.
Has
and,
it?
I
could put flowers on your head. Make
yeah.
It funner.
We'll do that. I actually have those pictures that we took last year that I'm going to put on my show notes. And I don't know if there are any with you on. Did you?
You did shoot me.
We did. Okay. I've got.
And
you,
I mean that in a good way.
No.
You got to clarify when you do school gardens about shooting.
Yes.
Yes.
You have to use.
Can't even say Columbine.
Wow. So you have to
that
say...
poor Rocky Mountain orchid. I call it Rocky Mountain orchid.
Wow. So you say, I will photograph you.
No, okay. I'm going to shoot you. It's fine.
Okay. Thank you so much for doing this. This is going to be such a good podcast because you encapsulate everything I love about Southern California, and I'm kind of miss that I don't live here anymore, but it's really great to break bread with you in this beautiful setting and enjoy the sun on my back and talk about flowers. And you're going to get a lot of, I think a lot of curious listeners of this podcast will be checking you out on Instagram and Twitter and see what you're doing. And you should, do people send you photos of themselves with flowers on their head?
They can tag me.
All right.
Tag flowers on your head.
All right. We'll do that.
And my infamous Instagram ID.
Which
is? Cocozochitl. Cocoxochitl.
Okay. I'm going to put that on the show notes because I obviously don't know how to pronounce it. And like you said, it's like Latin.
You don't speak Nahuatl?
No? Yeah.
Not
no.
so much?
Mm-mm.
No.
Thanks so much, Mud.
Adore you.
Okay, you too. Thanks so much for joining me this week, and please return again as I continue to share insightful and educational episodes recorded exclusively for the Slow Flowers podcast. I will devote the next 2 weeks to Valentine's Day, turning the focus to American-grown flowers for this top floral holiday. If we can't show our love with local flowers, what's the point? I'll introduce you to some of the people who are doing exciting things to innovate at Valentine's Day, getting their clients out of the gift-giving rut that involves thinking a generic bunch of a dozen red roses, probably imported, equates true affection and gestures of love. Please return to gain new ideas and let me know what you're doing this Valentine's Day. I'd love to share your efforts with our listeners. Thanks to the Slow Flowers Tribe, this podcast has been downloaded more than 32,000 times. In fact, the month of January hit an all-time high as our most popular to date, with more than 3,000 downloads of current and archived interviews. And I'm encouraged to know that more listeners are discovering this flower-powered podcast every day. If you like what you hear, please consider logging onto iTunes and posting a listener review. And until next week, please join me in putting more American-grown flowers on the table, one vase at a time. The Slow Flowers Podcast is engineered and edited by Andrew Wheatley and Hannah Holtgertz.